This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kaniton and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Monday the 8th of February. And you know, I always ask you how you're doing this morning. I'm going to ask you instead, Noel, are you hyped for this week in studio with us?
Yes, it is. I think I'll be here for 3 days.
Yes, and it is a short week.
Yes, it is a very short week for me.
Oh my God, that was so funny, Lynn. It was such a change of pace from the usual way we start our mornings together.
I also like the fact that Noelle is hyped because of the fact that actually she doesn't have to be in studio with us that long this
week.
Have
you not got the message by now? she's hyped and excited by the fact of spending less and less time with us. So
that's the sound of my heart breaking into
a little bit. You mean the sound of nothing?
Yeah. Silence. Did your heart actually break?
Yes, it did. And it's now in pieces over the studio floor anyway.
Someone get a broom. We need to sweep this out. I'm good. It's been, I was actually on leave last week. I was on leave since Taipusa. My sister's back from Switzerland. So it was very nice to have her back for a little bit. She was in quarantine for a little while. She didn't have a bad experience. Actually, I think her experience was quite good.
Did she have to quarantine in the hotel or she's allowed to do it at home?
Hotel. So I think there's a system that you go through it and all of that. So you got to do a test before she left Switzerland. Then when she came back, she had to do a test. I think towards the end of it, if you test positive, then you leave the hotel.
And was it quite negative, then you leave the hotel?
Sorry. Yeah. If you test negative, then you're allowed to leave Hotel California.
Otherwise, it's Hotel California.
Yeah. And she gave like huge props to the frontline workers at the airport. She said you could see that they were exhausted, but they were all doing their very best to make sure it was a smooth experience for everyone. And time consuming, but it was not a bad experience. It was a very smooth experience.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so it's been good to have her back for a little while.
And it's good to be back in studio with the both of you as well for this slightly shorter week because we're heading into the Chinese New Year celebration as well at the end of this week, albeit it's a bit of a muted one, I think. But in the meantime, what do we have in this next hour or so? What are we looking at 6:30, Noel?
As usual, international news, and we're going to be looking at Myanmar as well as what Biden is up to in terms of foreign policy.
And a little bit closer, about 6:15, we're going to be talking about the farmers' protests in India. But the angle we're going to be taking here is the role of celebrity influence, and in particular, foreign celebrity influence on the protests and the general affairs of a nation. And towards the end of the hour, of course, a little look at the local papers and portals.
And if you want to weigh in on these conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we're going to be looking at a masterclass on motivating teams. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Good Enough by Dodgy, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:07 in the morning, not a Friday. It's a Monday, the 8th of February.
Slip of the tongue.
Slightly Freudian slip. We are looking this morning at an article in Fast Company. This is talking about motivating teams. And the example that they're taking here is a set of speeches made by U.S. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris to the State Department, thanking them for their service and motivating them towards another couple of years.
Yeah, no surprises here. I picked this article. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. And I saw this and I was quite interested in very specifically like what they were talking about, right? Because the author himself says he happened to watch this this press conference, and it was a State Department press conference with the newly sworn in Anthony Blinken, and both Kamala Harris and Joe Biden were there. So I pulled up the video and I watched the speech. And I maybe sound like an old record at this point, right? But I think it's an old record that's worth repeating because it is such a breath of fresh air to watch a VP, or more specifically the president, speak with empathy and calm and a certain sense of assurance of the future going forward, right? And more importantly, actually trusting the employees of the State Department. The way it was such an empathetic speech, and Kamala Harris came off very strong. I really liked the way she delivered her speech. Joe Biden came off very empathetic, but both of them, and I think the points highlighted in this article, really tackled a few things that great leaders do, right? And you know, words are words, right? Words can be cheap, but The fact these words are very powerful as well in the right use and right hands. I mean, Donald Trump used words very powerfully for 4 years in ways that we weren't big fans of. But the four main things here that this writer pointed out here was, one, they said thanks and they specified why instead of just saying one grand, oh, thank you for everything. Mm. They were specific about the contributions and the sacrifices the State Department employees make, things like their family, because they move around quite a bit. So they have to uproot the family quite often. They explained why the work matters. And this is something that's really important, especially coming off the back of 4 years of Trumpism, of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made it a concerted effort to say, hey, you guys are the most important. You're our frontliners in this, in our pursuit to make America, well, to reestablish our alliances across the globe.
You hesitated.
I hesitated.
Make America great.
I almost said MAGA, but I will not do that. And it was not all a fest of like, oh, love and all of that. Biden was very clear and like, hey, here are my expectations. And one particular quote I really liked was, and I'm just going to read this out here, is, I'm not joking when I say this. If you are ever working with me and I hear you treat another colleague with disrespect, talk down to someone, I promise you, I will fire you on the spot. On the spot, no ifs and or buts. Everybody's entitled to be treated with decency and dignity. And that one sentence, I think, just shows you the gulf of difference between the last presidency and this current one.
Yes, the last one certainly was a far more negative one. And, you know, what I understand was people who worked with Trump, they often feared, either they feared him or they feared for their life or they feared for what, you know, they could be doing wrong. So I think, you know, certainly a breath of fresh air. So I think some points for me, some key takeaway points are gratitude. He expressed gratitude. And also he made sure that it sort of matched up with what people had contributed. And another thing is, you know, refocusing Americans' interest in international diplomacy. So it's not just about thinking insular, not thinking about, you know, just thinking about yourself, but thinking about your role. And I think here is where it's very inspiring, because I think he gives a lot of pride to American citizens that, you know, their place in the world matter, right? I mean, he didn't use those words in specific terms, but, you know, he gave the sense that you're the world's greatest nation and you are like, in some ways, the caretaker and their country matter. And thirdly, I think what I like about the speech also was he emphasized values. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, that tends to be very underrated. We're so focused on outcomes, output, work processes, but we forget values, right? And values of integrity, accountability, diversity, decency. I think so for me, that's really a breath of fresh air, because that's really what leadership is about. What values do you espouse, right? And also psychological safety. I think that was really important, because does your team respect you out of genuine respect, or do they actually just fear you?
And that's so important, right? Because we forget a lot of times that, yes, a leader needs to be an executive and make decisions and move things forward, but you're also a role model. You're also the beacon. You're also the figurehead. A lot of the things you do set the standards for what everyone else does. And that's not to say that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris don't have their work cut out for the next 4 years. There are going to be lots of questions for both of them in terms of the policy drivers, in concerns over inflation with the $1.9 trillion stimulus they're going to put out. Lots of work in front of them, but this is very nice to see as the starting point.
You know, a part of me does wonder whether or not we are perhaps over-magnifying the good points of Joe Biden's administration mm-hmm. thus far, because, you know, just in comparison to Donald Trump, we have to remember that Donald Trump really was the outlier in this. But even just taking the speech, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's speech as it was, I listened to it and I felt inspired, and I'm not even the target audience.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a good example of how to motivate the people who work for you. Right. It is. I thought that one of the most important things he did was what was outlined in this Fast Company article, creating that psychologically safe environment that you touched on, Noel, because he told his people, I believe in you. We need you. I trust you. And I'm going to have your back. And that is something that even in teams here in the kind of more average business environment, you need to have that faith in your leader to support you. Otherwise, you are not going to have the confidence to take forward your ideas and try and fail and try again. You need to have that supportive environment, and a leader is very important to set that tone for the rest of the team. So, of course, humor is also another very powerful management asset. And Joe Biden's very good at kind of peppering his speeches with little funny anecdotes or comments. And I think he commented something about looking forward to a time where he can make the speech at a time where the podium doesn't have to be wiped down every other speaker.
The standard COVID-19 post-press conference joke. But hey, you know, that's just our take on that speech by both the VP and the president, right? So,
yes, do let us know what you think about it. And whether, what motivates you as a team and individually as well. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up, and then we're going to be taking a look at a little bit of a social media kerfuffle that's been happening over the farmers' protests in India. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Digital Witness by St. Vincent, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So we are looking at this story in the BBC now, and this is a kind of a peripheral story to the farmers' protests that have been happening in India, where tens of thousands of farmers have been protesting just outside of Delhi for more than 2 months against new laws that are going to be loosening rules around sale, pricing, storage of agricultural produce, which is a big deal for India, since the majority of their workforce is involved in agriculture in some way. And a tweet by pop superstar Rihanna has drawn global attention to this cause, as well as prompting an unprecedented backlash, not just from the Indian government and celebrities and Indian celebrities who are seen as aligned with the government, but also from the public at large.
What Rihanna tweeted was, "Why aren't we talking about this?" Question mark. And then she hashtagged farmers protest. So it appears that, or it looks like she supports the farmers, right, for demanding their rights to have a more negotiation power in this under this new regulation, where basically the markets will be liberalized and farmers cannot sell their produce at a guaranteed price. And so the balance of power, they are worried that now the balance of power, the power will be more in institutions, in companies that buy their produce. So nationalistic trolls had really, really got onto her case, right? And I just feel like it seems overdone. This is really, truly trolling.
It seems the reaction seems disproportionate to what the tweet actually was, which was basically just asking, why aren't we talking more about it?
Yeah, and specifically, the link that she tweeted was the India cuts internet around New Delhi as protesting farmers clash. So for all we know, Rihanna's point could be internet being cut to the farmers and basically infringing their ability to express and protest, right? There are a lot of different ways this onion can be peeled, or whatever that saying is. But essentially, there is also a little bit of like this anti-colonistic attitude, right, when it comes to India. So when a foreigner says something about this, about local policy, and comes off without the... And again, she's not actually saying anything here. She's asking the question, why aren't we talking about this? And she's probably talking to the Western world, which is more engrossed with anything related to their own politics and things like that. There is a certain anti-colonistic feel, especially when a foreigner says something about it. So it is very... the response here does seem coordinated from the celebrities. It looks like it, and we're not saying that it is, but the responses are very similar in nature, supporting the BJP and this whole, the whole world is conspiring against India and making us look bad. I wonder if a local celebrity had done it, whether they would have gone off differently, right? But if you look at the trolls and the way they've gone after Rihanna, it's actually really vicious.
I think if a local celebrity had done it, it would have been a lot more targeted, because India does have a history of penalizing reporters as well.
Yeah.
Journalists who have been covering the farmers' protests have been hit with sedition cases, the female journalists particularly have been the subject of death and rape threats multiple times, attempted assaults. This is something that is unfortunately very prevalent in India. You know, this backlash against what is perceived as anti-government voices, and they're not necessarily perpetrated by the BJP. Although you could argue that these sedition cases that are brought by the BJP are forms of attempting to silence dissenting voices, they're also perpetrated by the public, which is what can make this also very dangerous. So This raises the question of, what kind of power foreign celebrities also hold, right? Because Rihanna's Twitter following is massive. She has 100 million Twitter followers. So the Indian government does appear to have been on a reasonably concerted effort to minimize some of the kind of coverage and the criticism over these farmers' protests in the international media. So Rihanna could well have jeopardized their efforts, but would it actually have warranted such a huge pushback?
Yeah, I'm also just wondering whether they're concerned over this becoming a much bigger story within the country itself, right? Because end of the day, when we take a look at the farming breakdown here, it only contributes about 15% to India's GDP, but almost half of the workforce works in farming or agriculture. So that's a lot of voters. That's a lot of voters right there. And maybe the BJP doesn't want to come off as anti-small farmer. And what this has done is that it has blown up the situation. And if you look at how the BJP or the politicians in India have now done a masterclass in swinging this to another, they've diverted the attention. It's no longer about farming, but it's now about India against propaganda. And it was started by the Home Minister, Amit Shah, who tweeted out, "No propaganda can deter India's unity. No propaganda can stop India to attain new heights," and so on and so forth. So now they've changed it to a us versus them, which is populism 101.
Yeah, so I think the key word here is diverting people's attention, right? Sometimes it's divide and conquer. It's about diverting, choosing a bogeyman to direct everyone's energy towards. It's like how in Malaysia, DAP is that favorite bogeyman, right? And so they found one in Rihanna. And so, I think the US embassy has also stepped in.
Yes.
And I wonder if this is going to be bubbling up into some diplomacy row. And who knows, right? The BJP or, you know, people who are aligned to BJP might, you know, play it up to such that the US government may actually have to step in and say something to, to just mend bridges.
I wonder how things are going to be now that Modi's best friend isn't in the White House anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see how Anthony Blinken and Biden administration tackles this and the BJP and Modi government going forward. Oh, apparently someone's trying to hack my voice box.
Yeah, so do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, we're about to head into the 6:30 news bulletin, though, and here to take you there is Modern English with I Melt With You, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Someday by The Strokes, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lindmark, Roshan Kanison and Noel Lim. It is 6:38 in the morning, Monday the 8th of February, and we are now turning our attention to what's been happening internationally. And of course, I think the biggest news over the whole of last week was the coup that was seen in Myanmar. And now the BBC is reporting that the country is seeing some of its largest protests in more than a decade. Tens of thousands of people turning to the streets to rally against the military coup and demanding the release of elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Crowds in the main city of Yangon chanted things like, "We don't want military dictatorship, we want democracy," and rallies were held in about a dozen other cities as well around the country.
So far, the army has not yet commented on the growing opposition to Monday's coup. Actually, I don't think they will be commenting. So, you know, looking at what's happening in Yangon, people wore red shirts and held red balloons, the colour of Ms. Suu Kyi's party. Cars and buses slowed down to sound their horns in support. Many even flashed their three-finger salute as a symbol of defiance against authorities. And also, I think teachers have also come out to protest, as well as some frontline workers too. And just looking at the crowds, you know, there was definitely no physical distancing taking place. So people are just taking their lives, you know, taking a chance and going out there to protest.
Yeah. And if you take a look at the role of, I guess, social media and all of this, right, I think the Facebook is one of the primary ways where news gets distributed in Myanmar. And the platforms were asked to... To block the platforms for stability reasons, right? Essentially, we're seeing, you know, same, a very similar aspect to the whole shutting of the internet situation that we saw with India and the farmers' protests. Similar things are happening here. And it's a very interesting situation because at the same time, they're calling back for their vote, right? Respect our vote. The Myanmaris are saying respect our vote. At the same time, the country is... This is off the back of its first election in more than, I can't remember how many years. Mm-hmm. So it really does come off as a very, it was very shocking to see. I guess to some long watchers of the region, they would have been, I guess, counting, they would have expected this to be a possibility. But to the hopefuls in the region, we would have been like, oh, okay, this is a good sign. It's a sign of progress moving forward. And of course, we'll be watching how this plays out going forward.
Yeah, so this is an interesting situation, right? The BBC has an analysis from BBC Burmese in Yangon, and the title of this short kind of segment is "Openly Angry, Quietly Afraid," which is I think very powerful because it speaks to the sentiment that people are angry that their vote has been denied. But they're also very aware of the fact that the military is perfectly capable of using violence to suppress dissent. But they also feel like they don't have a choice. Apparently, a group of protesters who met a row of soldiers during the protests chanted at them, "You're trained to be professional. Soldiers do not kill civilians."
Yeah, so, and what's happening internationally, right? Are people supporting Aung San Suu Kyi? So the leaders of Indonesia and as well as Malaysia, I think on Friday, they are seeking a special meeting of foreign ministers of Southeast Asian nations to discuss the situation in Myanmar. I think they are trying to step up to the plate. And of course, we know Aung San Suu Kyi had taken a lot of flak, right, for not, defending the rights of the Rohingyas. But here we can, really just appreciate what precarious position she is in, right? You know, if she speaks up, the military could ill-treat her. And they obviously didn't hesitate to do so last week.
Yeah, I think she's in under house arrest along with other leaders. And if you look at Myanmar overall, right? It's a country of 54 million people in the region. And taking a look at the backdrop of all of this, right? Essentially before the election in 2011, it was ruled by a military government since 1962, either directly or indirectly, which has been a concern overall. And in 2010s, I think you started to see that liberalization come to be after Aung San Suu Kyi spent a lot of time campaigning for democratic liberal reforms among other people as well. And finally, a government led by by Aung San Suu Kyi came to power during a 2015 election. So not very long before things have come to reverse itself.
Yeah, so we'll be watching this situation quite closely indeed. And if you're interested in hearing more about it, we spoke to Sebastian Strangio, a Southeast Asia editor at The Diplomat last week. You can find the podcast, it was on a morning brief. You can find the podcast on the BFM app as well as on Spotify. It's titled Irrawaddy Turbulence. But also just very quickly, let's turn our attention to some other news that is coming out of the US. So the US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, he has fired shots across the bow at China, saying that Washington would hold Beijing accountable for its abuses in the first high-level interaction between the two countries since Joe Biden became president. So this is perhaps not the best indicator for the reparation of U.S.-China relations in this new administration, but we were expecting a similar kind of hawkish stance on China from the Biden administration.
Yeah, so I think the administration is going to put a lot of pressure on them for human rights, their human rights record. So China really has two or three choices, right? One, they just completely ignore the US and just do their own thing. But that will put them they might become an international pariah, or there will be some compromise or some, cosmetic changes will be made. But, with the Chinese, right, I don't think the Chinese are fazed by this approach or hardline approach by the US. After all, they wrote The Art of War, right? So they will calculate their moves, and it'll be really exciting to see how this drama will unfold.
I think it's going to be very interesting because the human rights angle as opposed to the economic angle is going to bring with it different tools, right? It's first and foremost, it's going to be Antony Blinken and the State Department that are going to be at the forefront of this, and the three fronts which are going to be in the focus: Hong Kong, Tibet, and the Uyghurs in the Xinjiang province. So that's going to be a concern. Those are going to be the three factors I think that people are going to be paying attention to, and that the US will be paying attention to.
Yes, so we're going to be paying attention to all of this as well and bringing you updates as we get them. But do let us know what you think about all the news that we've discussed today. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up for you, and then we're going to be taking a look at what's on the front pages of our own local papers and portals. But first, some music. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, that was I Love Rock and Roll by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. And we have some exciting stories for you from the papers and portals. What do we have in the New Straits Times this morning, Noel?
Yes, on the front page, there's an empty hall with chairs lined up, and that's because Shah Alam's Malawati Stadium will be converted to a COVID-19 assessment centre. So the MOH is planning ahead because cases are still rising, or they're still, like, you know, at 3,000 plus mark, and so they're naturally taking precaution. Then the NSC also spoke to a few experts. Epidemiologist Dr. Awang Mahmud said that without planning, the government would not be able to implement the massive immunizations exercise properly. And so, for example, there has to be smooth logistics. You can imagine with such a massive nationwide operations, there will be leakages, there will be wastages. So I think the government will just have to plan properly. But I'm really more interested in how are they going to register people for this immunization, right? When I asked my friends in Singapore who are like below 60 years old, they say they have no idea, actually. They have no idea. They have not been asked to register, so they do not know when their turn will be. So it looks like, it's not that simple, right? Even Singapore hasn't got that system in place yet to register people.
Yeah, but on that note, we do have very, very big databases in this country, right? Because we've had what was BRIM, then became BSN. I think that's what
BSH
after that. So that's one big database. EPF is another big database. And then you've also got the taxpaying database, LSDN database. Now, whether we can integrate all three, that's going to be a big issue to contend with, right? But those are they're not perfect databases. I think we've had in the past stories of some families getting double contributions for the BSH or BRIM that time, or some families getting completely missed out, as we saw with the whole stimulus money being rolled out last year. But when we talk about the MCOs, I think over the weekend, we finally got the R0 below 1 for the nation. Although there are certain points, I think the DG made special mention to say that it's not across, that's not every area in the nation, right? There's still areas that are above 1, but it's progress, right? And I think I saw a screenshot last week of global cases also on the downtrend. So we're starting to see the downtrend happening, but that doesn't mean people should be not adhere to the SOPs, right? It's important to make sure that you don't contribute to the spread and all of that.
Yeah, and on the back of the fact that the R0 has come down below 1 again, albeit in some, not across the country, we are heading into another celebratory weekend. And the Star's front page here is set the table for 15, talking about the revised Chinese New Year SOPs, because we don't want the R0 to climb once again across the country. And despite, desires for a nice big reunion dinner. That said, I think the restriction is now 15 family members within a 10-kilometer radius, which was a little bit better than the original SOPs that were published, which gained a lot of flack from social media. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think it is just important to ensure that all safety precautions are taken at this time, because while people are traveling, albeit within that 10-kilometer radius to family members' houses, you don't want to take the virus with you, because that'll be one fantastic Chinese New Year gift, I imagine. So just be careful and adhere to all to SOPs at all times.
I just want to highlight this one article here on Malay Mail, and the headline here is Mastering the Art of Coalition Building Key Now That Days of Single Dominant Party Are Over, says the AP strategist. And the strategist that they are citing here is Liu Qintong, who's spoken to us on BFM a few times. That is a very long title for any book, but that's not a book, it's an article title. And I think essentially the heart of this is no single party no longer dominates politics post GE14, right? Everyone is part of, everyone needs a coalition. This is, in quotes, we're all in this together, essentially. That each coalition needs to look at each other and be like, okay, we need to build coalitions. And that's actually, if you look at most parliamentary constituencies across the globe, unless someone points out something else otherwise, whether it's India, or actually India, because the BJP had a very strong showing last time around, they didn't need to build a coalition. But in the UK, for a long time, it has been about coalition building.
And
New Zealand, Australia, especially if you want to get laws through, it's about bipartisanship or tripartisanship or just multiple parties dealing with them and getting those things through. But essentially, this is the next next stage of politics, right? No longer one party on either side dictating the terms to the rest of the components in the of the coalition. So, yes, there have been some concerns and hiccups along the way since G14. But I am very interested to see how politics in Malaysia does play out over the next 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. Right now, the politicking has come to a little bit of a pause now that we're in emergency. But G15 is only, it will come at some point. So we'll see how that plays out.
So speaking of that state of emergency, Malaysia Kini has an interesting article calling, it is a question from Lim Kit Siang. So this is a DAP veteran, of course, the DAP veteran, asking, where is the bipartisan emergency committee mm-hmm. to advise the Yang Dipertuan Agong on whether or not the emergency is needed? So if we remember, the Prime Minister said that, promised that he would set up this independent and bipartisan committee, but Kit Siang is saying, as yet, nothing has materialized. So where is it?
Oh, you asking me? Because you pointed to me. Well, I'll tell you, I do not know the answer. But one thing I know, everything, the country kind of comes to a standstill before Chinese New Year. After Chinese New Year, things will pick up. Mm-hmm. So I'm expecting that it will be the same for Muhyiddin. After all, he just came back from Indonesia, or maybe he's still there, to have this travel green lane arrangement with Indonesia. So right now, he's a bit busy.
And speaking of Indonesia, Lynn, you've got an interesting breakfast grill today with Ben Bland on Jokowi, basically. And how he's a particularly interesting politician. I'm quite interested to listen to this.
Yeah, so this is a really this is going to be a really interesting conversation later on at about 8 o'clock. I'll be speaking with Ben Bland, director of the Southeast Asia program at the Lowy Institute, and he authored a book about Jokowi's life and times, and his meteoric rise from furniture maker to mayor of Solo to president of the country in about a decade, which is the equivalent that he used was someone going from a Pittsburgh car salesman. In the US to president of the country in about that same time. So it's going to be an interesting conversation.
To quote Drake, started from the bottom, now he here. And that's a very niche pop culture reference. I'm sorry. I take it back. Can we rewind? Okay. Can we take that
sounds
off the tape, please?
Sounds a bit too atas for me.
Yeah. So that's something that to look forward to later on at about 8 o'clock. But right now we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, and then more business news and analysis for you. But to take you into the news bulletin is some music. I Got My Mojo Working by Muddy Waters, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.